What do I do now? He usually sends weird stuff. Okay. So thanks to the organizers for letting me speak. And even though it's the last talk, it's still nice that they asked me. surprisingly many people here, by the way. So I want to talk about quantum string commitment. That's a project that I've been working on together with Matthias Cristando, Patrick Hayden, Hoi Fong Lo, and Stephanie Weiner. And they know much more about this than I do. But I will give the talk. Okay, let me quickly recall things that have been said over and over this week. I guess that's the, well, maybe advantage or maybe disadvantage of speaking last, that part of your slides have been shown before. So bit commitment. Alice wants to commit a bit, and we have these two phases, the commit and the reveal phase, and we have these security conditions that Alice can only open X successfully, and Bob's probability of guessing X before the reveal phase is a half. And as you've seen, Andres shown that if you have bit commitment, then you can do coin flipping. Well, Andres also showed coin flipping. You want that a dishonest Alice, then the coin is still random. If Bob is dishonest, then the coin is also still random. So one cannot bias the outcome. And if you have bit commitment, then you can actually do that perfectly, because Alice commits to a random bit B1, Bob then sends a random bit B2 to Alice, and then bet. And then Alice opens the bit B1, and they take the XOR as the common coin. So it also doesn't come as a surprise anymore that these things are impossible. And let me sort of review the impossibility proof for you, so that you can sort of get a better understanding of what we will be doing next. So classically, bit commitment is impossible because of the following. Suppose that you had a bit commitment scheme that was perfectly hiding, then that means that before the reveal phase, Bob cannot see the difference between a 0 and a 1. Otherwise, it wouldn't be perfectly hiding. But now Bob could try all possible reveal messages from Alice and Bob, like that he possibly could get from her, and it should be the case that both a 0 and a 1 are equally likely. So he tries all these, and both 0 and 1 are still equally likely. But that means that it can never be binding for Alice, because now she can reveal still a 0 and a 1 consistent with the commit, right? Because Bob couldn't see a difference. Both a 0 and a 1 were still possible as a reveal message, so Alice can send whichever of the two she likes after the commit phase. And also classical coin flipping is impossible, and Andres mentioned that. It always is the case that no matter what protocol you have, that either Alice can force the outcome to 0, or Bob will be able to force the outcome to 1. And the reasoning here is slightly more complicated, but it's still easy. It's game theory. You can view this coin flip as a game where Alice wins if the outcome is 0 and Bob wins if the outcome is 1. And the game theory says that there is a winning strategy for one of the two. So then a natural thing to do is to put on computational assumptions. So you will restrict Bob and Alice to be polynomial time computable. And then trying this bit commitment, trying all possible messages will not work anymore, because this may take exponential time, and you're bound Bob by polynomial time machine. And indeed, if you put on computational assumptions, then schemes are possible. In particular, you have to assume that P is not equal to NP, and even stronger things, that certain kinds of one-way functions exist. Well, then there was some excitement about quantum world and whether maybe quantum bit commitment is possible. Let me describe what I mean by quantum bit commitment, and note that Alice can always now commit to a superposition of a 0 and a 1. So this is a big difference between with the classical setting. And again, we have our commit phase, where Alice commits to some classical bit X, and in the reveal phase she opens the commit. And we have these binding properties now that say that P tilde of 0 be the probability of successfully revealing 0, that the probability of successfully revealing 0 plus the probability of successfully revealing 1 should be bounded by 1. And hiding, we still want that Bob's probability of guessing X before the reveal is no more than a half. And at first it feels that this might be possible, because this classical proof that I sketched, where Bob tries all the possible reveal messages, that doesn't work in the quantum case, because if he wants to do that, he might have to measure some of these commitments, the commitment that he received from Alice, and that might destroy the committed state. So this proof seems to break down. But nevertheless, Myers and independently Low and Chow proved that quantum bit commitment is impossible. And let me go also through this proof, because it's insightful in the rest of the talk. So after the reveal phase, Bob will get a density matrix, rho 0 or rho 1. Rho 0 for if Alice committed to 0, and rho 1 for if Alice committed to a 1. Now the fact that these should be perfectly hiding means that these two density matrices have to be the same. Otherwise there would be a measurement which would help Bob distinguish, give him some advantage on learning whether the commit was a 0 or a 1. So here's the attack of Alice. She does the following purifying idea. You can always show that if you have a density matrix rho 0, then you can purify it to a pure state, phi 0, such that if you trace out the Alice's part, which you will keep, then you get back the density matrix rho 0. So you can always do that. It's an easy exercise. And the same thing holds for rho 1. So Alice can build these states phi 0 and phi 1 that correspond to the committed that corresponds to the committed state rho 0 and committed state rho 1 if you trace out her part of the system. Now there's a theorem called Smith decomposition, which says that if you have a situation like that, so I have these two density matrices rho 0 and rho 1, and they are the same, then I can always find three sets of bases, where the blue ones are the ones on Alice's side and the red ones are the ones on Bob's side, and you can always write this phi 0 as a sum of the bases on Bob's side, on Alice's side, and the bases on Bob's side, and note that for both these states the basis on Bob's side is the same. Question? Yeah, there should be, but I'm sort of not putting them in. Yeah, there should be. There should be some amplitude depending on these EIs. And note that the difference between phi 0 and phi 1 is only in the choice of bases, E or E prime, on Alice's side. But now it's easy for Alice to cheat because it only depends on this. The difference between phi 0 and phi 1 is it depends only on the choice of bases that Alice has. And we all know that there has to be a unitary. There is a unitary that will transform this basis into the other basis. And so Alice can, after she plays honest but does this purifying trick, she can later on apply the unitary to her part of the system to reveal either a 0 or a 1. I had an example here, which, let's go through it. So there's this idea that doesn't work, obviously, although Louis is playing tricks like this in a bounded storage model. Suppose that I'm would have the following bit commitment scheme where Alice does the following. If she wants to commit to a 0, she will pick the state psi I at random from the plus or the minus state, so she will pick one of these at random. And if she wants to commit to a 1, she will just choose a 0 or a 1 at random in the computational basis. And now she sends that state to Bob, and Bob measures in a random basis, and either in this basis or in this basis, and he will obtain a result. And now in the reveal basis, Alice will actually tell in which basis she sent this state and what the bit was that she sent. And then Bob, in case he guessed correctly the basis, checks that indeed everything is okie dokie with what Alice said. And this feels like a good scheme, because you can prove that the density matrix Bob receives in case of a 0 and a 1 is identical, and it also feels that Alice cannot cheat. Although that's not true, because we proved it's not true. And here's the attack. Here it's shown that the density matrices are the same for row 1 and row 0. And here's the attack. Alice purifies, and in case of of the 0, she actually this should be 1, I think. But in case of the one case, she can purify her state instead of sending a 0 and a 1 in the computational basis. She just sends, she creates this EPR pair and sends over the second half. And in case of a 1, she purifies by making this state 0 plus 1 and then a plus or a minus in the second register, and she sends over the second half. And now it's just a simple manipulation to show that this state is equal to this blue state, just by rewriting. And then if you apply a Hadamard on just Alice's part of the system, then you can transform this state into 0, 0, plus 1, 1, which was equal to the 1 commit. So here you can sort of see an illustration of this proof to a system that may seem at first to be secure, a bit commitment protocol. Okay, so Andres also showed that some weak form of bit commitment is possible, where he used that for his coin flipping, where Bob can learn the bit with probability 3/4, and Alice can cheat with probability 3/4. So if you add up these two p tildes, you get 1.5. And as you have seen, that yields a coin flipping protocol where nobody can bias the coin more than a quarter. And this is almost tight, as was shown by Kitaev. So what more can I offer you in this final session of today? Actually, I hope it's not the final session, Mr. Chairman. And certainly I hope it's not my final talk. But what more than more bits? And so the idea is to commit not to a single bit, but to a string of bits. So there they are. I have a string of n bits now. And let me give you a scheme that's just the classical bit commit or a string commitment scheme that already does something interesting. So Alice sends just the first half of the n over 2 bits to Bob. And in the reveal phase, she sends the second n over 2 bits to Bob. Now, you might argue that something has happened here because Alice can only cheat at most n over 2 of the bits, namely the one that she sent in the second half, and Bob can only learn n over 2 of the bits, namely the bits that were sent in the first half. So we have a scheme here that performs some binding, has some binding and some hiding properties, although completely trivial. But nevertheless, let's keep it in mind. So quantum bit string commitment should be the following. Again, Alice can commit to a superposition of bit, classical bit strings. In the commit, she commits to some X, and in the reveal, she opens that string, and Bob then learns what X was. And again, we want to have these two properties, A binding and B hiding. And A binding is as before, let's take the sum of all the X such that Bob successfully can reveal X given a fixed commit. Alice can do that. And that's, let's look at, I mean, just as before, but now we take the sum over all possibilities. And we say that if it's A binding, then this sum is bound by 2 to the A. And B binding, let me be a little bit vague, we say that Bob's information about X after the commit phase is bounded by B. Where I haven't made precise what I mean by information of X. And it turns out that actually leaves open a whole slew of possibilities, and let's investigate a couple of them. Oh, and note that the previous scheme was N over 2 binding and N over 2 hiding. I mean, even if I haven't told you what my measure of information was, it was clear that Bob did not have more than N over 2 bits of information. Okay, so here's two options. So Bob gets some density matrix, rho x, with some particular probability. So he gets sort of this from this ensemble, he gets a state. And let's define the density matrix corresponding to that ensemble to be rho e. Then one particularly nice definition is to bound the Holevo information, which is this quantity chi e, which is defined as the von Neumann entropy of this density matrix rho e minus this sum x px, the von Neumann entropy over rho x. And another way of binding the information that Bob has is by means of this accessible information, which is more of an operational formulation of information. Namely, you look at the best POVM measurement that Bob can do in order to maximize the mutual information between what he measures and the random variable that Alice has. Now, if you don't like all these things, then you're classical, then you can just think of it as follows. The Holevo information is just the mutual information between X and rho X, namely what Bob has, and the accessible information is the mutual information between Alice and what can be extracted by Bob. That's a way of putting it in words. So here are our results, and it will crucially make a difference which of these two notions you use. Because for the Holevo information we can show, and actually I'm a little bit lying here, I'm sweeping epsilons and deltas and precise statements under the rug just to make things clear. If you want the epsilons and deltas, then you should talk to one of my co-authors. or read the paper, or talk to me, but in that order. We show that if you have a scheme that's A binding and B hiding, then A plus B will be at least N. So in a picture, if this is the string of N bits that we are committing, then for any scheme it will be the case that Bob will, that Alice will have some part of the string under her control, and Bob will have then the remaining part. He'll learn about the remaining part. So there's actually nothing interesting that can be done. On the other hand, if we take this weaker notion of accessible information, then we actually come up with a scheme that's log n binding and just order 1 hiding. So the situation is much better. Namely, of the committed n bits, Alice only has a tiny part under her control, and Bob has an even smaller part that he learns about the string in this other notion. And of course this difference comes because these two information measures differ. So let me sketch to you the first bound, this whole level impossibility, or this thing that Alice and Bob together will control the whole string. Suppose it starts that I have a protocol that's B hiding. So in a picture, Bob only knows about these B bits of the string. Now I want to show that Alice can control the rest, these N minus B bits. Now, pick a suitable function f, and f will be a two-universal hash function that Renato talked about earlier this week. We actually will need Renato. Renato is featuring in many of these movies these days. So pick a hash function and hash it down to a string of n minus b bits. So here's a picture. Here I have all the strings of length n. And what this hash function does is it sort of groups strings together and it maps them to one particular string y0. And it sort of partitions this 2 to the n set into little blobs of size, 2 to the b, and maps them to strings of size n minus b. So we sort of reduce the string in size. And now think of this as, if you had a good hash function, then actually this, if you took a uniform x, then this y will also be uniformly distributed among all the y's of that length. Now let's define the following density matrix row y, which is the sum of all the strings x that map to y, and then let sum with equal weight the density matrices rho x, where rho x is the state that Alice sends to Bob after committing x. Remember, there's this scheme that's B binding that sends density matrices rho x if Alice wants to commit to x. So I have this rho y, which is the sum over all the things that map to y for some particular y. And now comes in Renato with his friend Robert Koenig. And actually there's better results now, but they show that if you took a different y, so y prime, then these two density matrices are the same. Actually, again, that won't be the same and it will not work for any y, but let's just think that it does for now. Complaints go to Switzerland. So if you do that, then these two density matrices are the same. Now here's a attack for Alice to show that Alice controls n minus b of the bits. And as again, as before, she does this purifying idea. So she starts with not just with x, but she starts with the state xx. And actually, she will take a superposition of all the axes that map to some particular string y0. Let's fix some y0 now. And again, Richard, it's not normalized here, in case you're wondering. So after the commit, she just plays along honestly in superposition over all of these x. She will be left with this pure state psi y0, right, which is the sum of all the strings that map to y0, followed by phi x, where that's the state that, if Bob has it and traces out Alice, is equal to rho x. And indeed, Bob's state is rho y0, as from the previous slide. But now, if we trust Renato, then if we had taken another y, then we would have ended up with rho y, and that rho y is equal to rho y0. But that means, if you take back into your mind this theorem about the Schmidt decomposition, that I can then rewrite these psi y0 and psi y in such a way that they only differ on Alice's side by means of a local transformation. And so I can move from rho y0 to rho y if I choose. And I can do that for any y. So in the picture, that means the following. We started out with y0, and we had here the superposition over all these x that map to y0, and we played along, and we could decide that we want to reveal now some x at random from this particular blob by just not doing anything. But we could also decide, by changing the state rho y0 to some other rho y, say rho y1, and reveal a string at random from this blob. And we can move around and move to any blob in this set. So that means that for each of such choice, the probability of revealing x is 2 to the minus b, because I don't have a grip anymore on which of the x's in the blob I will be revealing, but I still can go to other blobs. So the sum of all these probabilities together is 2 to the n minus b, and exactly that means that it is n minus b hiding. And that was what I wanted to prove. Okay, so that's the basic idea of this lower bound proof. Then I should add that there are some additions. First of all, Rahul, with a different method, proves in some sense for the one-shot case, and I'm not going into detail here, he proves a somewhat stronger bound. Then, second, Carlos Mouchon showed us that you can actually also prove a lower bound for a slightly different setting, where I can I have a slightly different definition for hiding, using and binding, using Kitaev's coin flipping lower bound. So that's also an addition. And last but not least, Renato has even a stronger bound that we can plug in into our setting and get even a stronger result. But all these things kind of don't show up in the way I mentioned or I presented the result, because I haven't talked about epsilons and deltas. But if you do, then these things make sense. Question? Yeah, Louis. What? Let's talk. I mean, yeah, let's take a shot of vodka and discuss this. Again, these things don't make sense when I mean, I don't want to make this precise now. Okay, so let me go to a more optimistic setting and show you that something can be done, although it's actually also kind of a sad story. So, good commitment schemes. And this starts with this idea of locking classical information. There's a beautiful paper by DiVincenzo, the Horodeckis, I think both, isn't it? Debbie Leung, John Smolin, and Barbara Tejal, where they analyze the following situation. Alice picks uniform at random some string x and sends to Bob either x or the Hadamard of X. So individually, the Hadamard applied to each individual bit to Bob. And then what they show, among other things, is that the accessible information of the state that Bob has is at most n over 2. So it's n over 2. So in other words, the best thing that Bob can do is just guess whether the string was coded in the normal basis or in the Hadamard basis, and then measure the string. And that surely gives you n over 2 bits, because in half of the time he actually has total junk. He measures nothing. On the other hand, if Bob knew the basis, which is just a single bit, then the accessible information is n, because he can apply the right transformation and get all the n bits out. So, with one bit, you unlock n over 2 bits. By the way, note that the Holevo information, so the real mutual information, has only gone down by one bit. Okay, so this now yields the following string commitment scheme. Alice, again, picks a string at random, and she either sends X or the Hadamard of X. And in the reveal phase, Alice just sends which basis she used, so this single bit. And if we adopt the notion of accessible information for hiding, then this is n over 2 hiding. Of course, the question is it binding? And yes, it turns out it's also one binding. And intuitively, the reason that this is the case is that Alice doesn't have a whole lot of things to do. She can only send a 0 or a 1 to Bob. So let's calculate that. It's also a very simple calculation. The probability to reveal X, the sum over all X, this is what we want to bound. And that's certainly bound by, for all X, the sum of revealing X when Alice sends a 0, and the probability of revealing X when she sends a 1. There are no more options. So when you write out what this means, or you can reverse the sums, then it is just the trace of finding X, projecting down on X, when Alice does the undo, or the reveal operation. I mean, any hue that she wants. So her Bob just does the undo according to the protocol. Now, taking the trace out of the sum and observing that this thing is identity, you get that this whole thing is bound by this by this expression, and then by cyclically permuting or cyclically rotating the U's, you get that this is equal to the trace of rho, which is 1, and since I have 2 terms here, this is bound by 2. And indeed, so this intuition of just revealing one classical bit indeed shows that Alice can only control at most one bit of the string. Okay, so this is good. So let's generalize this to more bases. In particular, here's a sort of a framework that will be a commitment scheme, and you have to sort of analyze how good it does. Let's pick 2 to the A unitaries, and then Alice encodes X by picking one of these unitaries at random and then sends over UI of X. That's the commit phase, and the reveal phase, Alice just tells Bob which of the 2 to the A unitaries she used. Now, the previous argument showed that this scheme is A binding. The same proof works, and again the same intuition holds. I mean, I'm only giving out A bits in the end in the reveal phase, so Alice has not a whole lot to play with. The question is this, what's the accessible information, or how hiding is this scheme? And this turns out to be a tricky question, although not if you allow unrealistic assumptions, and you look up this paper by Hayden, Leung, Shore, and Winter. Very nice paper. And we used it. But it's a sad story in a way. So what they show is that there exists actually n to the fourth unitaries. Such if you do this, you pick x and you encode it. You look at this ensemble, then the accessible information is constant. And I think actually it even goes down to zero, as Patrick told me yesterday. So this is even slightly better. So this gives, immediately if we plug it in and we use these unitaries, this gives us a 4 log n binding and maybe even 1 or going to 0 hiding scheme. So that's good. What's not good is that the proof uses a random construction. It's not constructive. They only show that these guys have to exist. And second, probably if we were ever able to find out which ones work, I would bet my life that they would be very inefficient to work with. Well, I guess I shouldn't bet my life, but I'm pretty sure that the ones they have in mind are very inefficient. Wouldn't you agree, Andreas? Yeah. Yeah, he's nodding, you know, in the back here. So it's actually completely useless result. But so it nevertheless shows that in principle such a thing is possible. Okay, and so then we had this great idea of making this efficient other people thought this. So this example of two, which is efficient, like either send X or send the Hadamard of X, let's try to extend that, and sort of the natural extension is called the mutually unbiased basis, which is the following thing. You probably have heard about this before, and also this week. It's a set of bases, B1, B2, up to Bk, such that if you encode something in one basis, so all the inner products of one basis state with respect to the basis states of another basis are completely random. They are sort of as far apart as you can think. And this is true for the identity and the Hadamard. And this would be an efficient construction. So there are constructions of these mutually unbiased bases that are efficient, that you can implement efficiently. However, locking is not proven for these bases. But we nevertheless remain hopeful that this is true, although there's kind of a spot here on the rug, and that's that Stephanie Weiner showed recently that there's actually a large class of MUPS that do not lock at all. So it's kind of it's open here what to do. So another great idea we had was let's apply this to string flipping. And so here's a quantum string flip. Alice commits to a random string X. Bob sends a random string Y. And Alice reveals to the string Z, which is X plus Y. And indeed, you can show that if you do the quantum string commitment protocol, that you get a string of high entropy, even if Alice and Bob are dishonest. But unfortunately, we actually found a classical protocol for this as well. So again, a dead end. So let me summarize. We have quantum string commitment is impossible when you use Holevo information, but it is impossible with accessible information, open problems. Is this optimal? Show that MUPS lock, but I guess you have to get around the problem of Stephanie. De-randomize this construction of the random unitaries. Maybe a better question is, what is the right property to guarantee locking? Applications, what can we do with string commitment? It seems useful. And the last one is cheat sensitivity. I haven't talked about that, but you can show that in certain cases by having Bob send back the string to Alice, that Alice can maybe detect that Bob was fiddling around with it. Because in all these things, we've seen that this accessible information is kind of a weak bound. Bob can still, by guessing, have a good shot at what Alice committed, whereas Alice is very committed. And so maybe you can put some of the freedom that Bob has back into Alice's hands by having cheat-sensitive protocols. Okay, so this is where I want to stop. Okay. Well, I think you're right that, I mean, you mean, for example, this accessible information notion being weak. Maybe I should spoil some water and you'll clean it for your obnoxious question. I guess you're right. Let me sort of defend a little bit. I mean, on one hand, this is the situation, so I cannot change the way the world is. And second, maybe you're right that there's all kinds of problems and it may not be useful, but nevertheless, on the other hand, there may be something that could be done with this. We hoped it would be this string flipping, but that apparently can be done as well. But I think it's very useful still to think along these lines and see whether there is something that you can do that you cannot do classically, so that you can do quantum that you cannot do classically. Of course, bearing to mind that these notions can be very problematic. Yeah. Well, for min entropy, I would, these lower bounds hold. I don't think, did we check for like what happens for the Renyi things in between? But I don't know. Renato is the expert on this, although he's not part of the paper. I think the question has been answered, no? Looking on at each other. Well, first of all, if you take all of these bases, then the binding property is destroyed. right? Because then you have too many choices. Alice has too much power. So you cannot do that. No, Matthias. Right. Yes, so this is actually there is a scheme by Adrian Kent, which tries to do exactly that, or which does exactly that. So you're right that in that sense, I mean, just send the fingerprint, right, of X. You're right that then the information of Bob is very limited; it's only login. But Alice, I mean, just our no-go theorem goes through. Alice will have a lot of power, namely n minus login to cheat. Well, the accessible information is also low. I mean, even the Holevo information is low for such a scheme. But I mean, you're just sending only log n qubits. So the no-go thing kicks in. You will really need something for which this real mutual information is high, but some other measure is small. I hope it's a new tool, or can lead to a new tool. You view it that way. Well, no, but I think you shouldn't, throw away the child. Do you say that, actually? Throw away the child with the bathwater, yeah, the baby with the bathwater. Yeah. Well, I think it's very, I mean, you thought about them, so. That's unnatural, I think. Well, I mean, well, we actually had this idea of bounding the Bob's measurement to some polynomial time circuit and see what you get then. Of course, once you start to limit more and say, I mean, you cannot use more than so many qubits, you end up in the regime that Louis was talking about, and then they have much stronger results. Like you can have full-fledged OT and Bitcoin. So. Whereas this is not using any assumptions, but getting weaker statements.